When I look back over the course of my life, even though I would never have anticipated if someone had asked me when I was 12 or 13 that I would find myself part of a community, a yoga community, a disciple of a master, all of the things that my life has been utterly defined by, I wouldn't have had any of those forms. Thinking of myself growing up in El Paso, Texas, remembering 3839 Hillcrest Drive where we lived and looking out the window and just seeing the life that was there and the desert where we lived, the tumbleweeds that would grow during the sandstorms, you know, just so many different elements of our lives. Visiting my grandparents in Key West, Florida. My grandfather actually helped build a lot of Key West, Florida by being a contractor who made the island bigger and bigger, just filling in around it. And now it's a huge tourist attraction, but when my parents and grandparents lived there, it was just a sleepy little town from which my mother could not escape fast enough. God sent her a soldier from New York City, and that was just all she needed. She was out of there. When they moved to El Paso, as it was, where my father was stationed during the war, there was a little bit of, there was a cotton field across the street. She'd only ever lived in Key West, and the farthest she'd ever gone was to Miami. And the day that the cotton bolls burst, which they all do at once, she looked out and saw the field covered with white. She called to my father, "Murray, Murray, it snowed, it snowed." She was so excited. She'd had so little experience. She was a little confused by the fact that it was really hot, but she, you know, she couldn't quite put it all together. You know, I think about all those experiences. When my parents had their 50th wedding anniversary, I gathered up family photos, the immigrants from Romania and from Eastern Europe and certain cities in Russia being of a Jewish origin. All of these people came across Ellis Island. Our family name was Projector, which God knows what that was in Russian, which is how it came from Russia. When you went across Ellis Island, you said something and then they wrote it down. So we ended up being the Projector family. My father, there were three of us. He used to call us 8 millimeter, 16 millimeter, and 32. You know, fathers are. I appreciate it much more now from the perspective I have. And you think of all that. My parents are gone now. They went to the astral world. Who knows? They might be living among us, although I'm not sure that Ananda would be their karma even in their next lifetime. But somewhere on the planet, somebody's, you know, cuddling a little baby. Last night, as most of you know, we had a huge wedding and many young people were there and there were lots of little babies. And I saw Kia Gornick holding this child about this big. This little tiny thing up against her chest. And all I could think of was, whoa, you have a long way to go. You know, I mean, he's just like this. He hasn't even started. He doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know where he's going. And I also just thought to myself, you know, by the time you come into your own, I'll be in the astral world, or perhaps even farther away, maybe even start it over again. And this, but the force that brought that little child to whoever he belonged to, he didn't belong to Kia, she was just holding him. I mean, there's this enormous, unstoppable force that's now been launched, that even though he looks like this tiny helpless thing, all the big strong people standing around him were all that little tiny helpless thing. Gita McGilloway, Gita Matlock, she is now 7 months pregnant on a very small frame, so she looks about 14 months pregnant, you know, because she is such a small person and such a big belly. And somewhere in there, another force has been launched. And it's an unstoppable force. Children are well cared for, they're loved, they're neglected, they're abused. All different things will happen to them. They're born, you know, in poverty, in simplicity, in luxury, but none of it matters. This force seems to keep going, doesn't it? This force we call time, which we're all caught in that level of reality where time really happens. And it just rolls on and on and on and on. And I was standing there again looking at Gita, and Craig and Erica, who were married last night, and all of their young friends, and feeling so wonderfully old, just blissfully old. I mean, I know it's exciting and it's nice to be there. And I remember being there because I was at Ananda. I was engaged in this extraordinary project that was just so thrilling. And David came on the scene, and just about the age that they were, we got married. And I can feel it all. It's not like any of it is gone from my memory. I have a very vivid memory for detail and for feeling. And I was there. We lived all through it. And yet, where is it? You know, how do you find it? Where is it? When we were early on the years at Ananda Village, and we were sort of finding our traditions, many things that now, all these decades later, have become the way we do things. We were just making them up. It was marvelously fun. We were, well, for the most part, we were incompetent, but there was nobody better. It was fabulously fun. We had, sometimes I think now of the things that I did. Oh my God, just amazing. Swamiji wanted to have an event once, and he put me in charge of it, and I just decided that we weren't going to have it. I never told him. And we just got closer and closer, and then I told him that I had decided not to do it. And he just, I think he was just too incredulous even to respond. And for years and years later, every so often when I would just feel a little too secure, he would remind me of that. I called it monkey karma. You're just walking along and then a monkey jumps out of the tree and lands on your head. And you remember, oh yeah, don't get too cocky and confident. You still have a lot to learn. It was good-natured, but nonetheless poignant. We have a ways to go in the soul's journey. We're not there yet. And when we decided we should celebrate Swamiji's birthday in some way that was more magnificent, more appropriate, we started making up plans, and there was a place at the seclusion retreat, which was actually off our land. It was down the Kadizzi Road and then down this hill. And that was where we used to have Easter. Where we had Swami's birthday was near the expanding light on the other side of the lake. Just this piece of this meadow we found, which actually may even be to this day called the birthday meadow. I'm not really sure what it is. And we just decided, because the more complicated and difficult things were, the better. And we decided we would just create a reality there in the birthday meadow. So we would drive trucks and just create this whole scene there, put up a pavilion and have a huge party for Swamiji. And we would manifest it. And then after it was older, we would disappear it. And I enjoyed every step of that process. I enjoyed the planning and the going down there and setting it up, and I enjoyed the disappearing of it just as much. I would always remember just sort of looking back and realize, did it ever happen? Was it ever really there? Yesterday we filled our whole courtyard for this wonderful celebration that we had, and those of us who stayed until it was pitch dark, just piece by piece took the whole thing apart. And you look out this morning, and there's a little bit of debris still around there and some things too high in the trees for us to get down. But it just came like that, and then it disappeared. And the question in our lives is, what are we going to identify with? Where are we going to find our happiness? Because here's this little baby. I believe his name was Jordan, now that I think about it. Little Jordan. Little Jordan has now manifested this little body. And he's not going to stay little already. He's just trucking along, getting it bigger and bigger and bigger. And what is Jordan going to identify with? Is he going to identify himself with that little tiny body, with the child's body, with the adolescent's body? I know a friend of mine, when she was trying to potty train her little boy, and he just really was not interested. And she tried the ploy that mothers use, "Don't you want to be a big boy?" He said, "No, Mommy, I like being a baby." he was like, "What's the hurry here? This is perfectly fine stage. Everybody's taking care of me, and I have no responsibilities. Why should I be pushing to be something I'm not?" Now, he's a spiritually minded adult nowadays, and he did learn to use the potty, as all children eventually do. You know, new mothers are reassured by older mothers. They all learn, don't worry, it'll be fine. But what is the reality of his life? Is the reality that enjoyment of being a baby, that wonderful childhood at Ananda, the present life that he lives as an adult, the day he gets to be as old as me? You know, I remember when Swami Kriyananda's parents were still alive and we went there for her birthday. Must have been in her 70s. No, it was David's birthday, actually. And we happened to be at her house with Swamiji, and she was a very gracious lady, and she shook David's hand and congratulated him on his birthday, but said, "You'd better be careful. If you keep on like this, you're going to end up just like me." And now I understand her perspective. But you see, we're all going to end up just like whatever there is. We're going to just keep moving through this. And the great temptation in life, almost irresistible. I could see Kia holding that little tiny child, and it was too self-evident, you know, will I have a baby like this? She grew up in a very loving family, and her picture of family life must be very attractive to her. And so she's holding this tiny child against her heart, and the only really serious time that I wanted to have a baby after we got married, by the time I came to Ananda, I'd let it go, is when Lakshmi put Andrew Selby into my arms when he was about 2 days old. He's one of my godsons. I'm holding this tiny little thing, and I looked up at David like this, you know. And very wisely he said, "Let's talk about it in a couple of weeks," you know. So by a couple of weeks had passed, I'd realized, nope, that's not for me. But you could see her holding it, and even I, you know, just, it's all right there. Where do we seek our happiness? You see, that's the entire question. Because this phenomenon of the world is just going to go on and on and on. We can't avoid it. David and I got married. Gita was asking me, you know, what was your wedding like? And Swami married us at that time. At a certain point, he stopped doing weddings. But we were so casual. The three of us just kind of strolled into the temple together, and we laid a big blue velvet bedspread down on the floor. The building was the expanding light building. It wasn't even finished. If you look in the pictures, you can still see the 2x4s and the insulation. But there was a roof. We were using it. We laid a bedspread down. We all sat down on the floor. Swami sat in a cushion. We sat on little kneeling benches. I was wearing a borrowed dress, borrowed sari. Swami's become, and he says, "Oh, what would you like me to sing?" His favorite wedding songs were "Come Away Death." And in the alternative, if you weren't willing to sing that one, he would offer "Go On Alone." He was the least sentimental person, perhaps. I don't think anyone ever seriously let him sing those songs. We'd always try for something else. But it was just as easy and casual as it could be. We didn't have any money. We didn't have any sentiment at that time. It was only years later that all the rest of us got to happen. But it all happens. You know, it's not our lives to stand back from it. There are spiritual lives in which you get to stand back from all of it. I say get to. Other people would say have to, but I would say get to. Stand back from all of it. You just don't bother. At a very young age, you enter some monastery, and that's the story. You wander off to the Himalayas, and you just hold it all at arm's length. From your heart, really. If you feel deprived, if you spend your whole time in the Himalayas dreaming about the world, you're better off just going back to the world. But there's also, and it has to be honored, there's a very deep and sincere spiritual life that just says, thank you, but no thank you. I'm just going to make this body, and when this body is old enough, I'm just going to go and be alone with God or live in a place where I don't have to do any of this. But the rest of us, or at least for this lifetime, we have to engage in all of this. In fact, it's what Master specifically wants us to do. At a certain point in his life, Swami Kriyananda was married for like 7 years. And a beautiful Italian woman, Rosanna Golia, who was just a lovely woman who brought into our community a wholly different spirit of family life and children. It was extremely important. Swamiji accepted it as a divine duty. It's hard to comprehend his consciousness exactly, but that's how he took it. because we needed to set an example of how you can live in the world but still put God first. And that's the entire key. When a reporter from the local paper came to visit Ananda to do a story about us many years ago when I was still living up there, and I was hosting him, and we went to Swamiji's house and we had lunch, and Ananda was not well known at that time, not even in the local area it wasn't known, and the reporter confessed that he was disappointed because he could see that his story wasn't going to be nearly as interesting as he'd hoped it would be. He was hoping once the gates of the compound creaked open, you know, he would come in and he would find some strange otherworldly and he could write some fascinating story. And he said, "You people seem just like everyone else." And Swamiji answered very seriously, in a way that the man had no idea what was said to him. He says, "We are, except that we put God first." And it was a deeply and profoundly true statement, which never made it into his story because he didn't know what it meant. But you see, everything is different when you put God first, because the antithesis of that is that you put your ego and yourself first. And people have a hard time even comprehending what's wrong with that. Well, if this is what I want, if this is what I need, and then we marry and we have some children, and then we put all of them first, but still, it's a circle that's just, in truth, an inch wider. And it's still my people, my children, my son, my daughter, my wife, my home. My. I watched this child once. You know, we romanticize the consciousness of little children. She was sitting on her mother's lap, and somehow she'd been listening to some of Master's chants. She was singing, "Lord, I am thine, I am thine, I am thine." Just a little tiny child, and we were all so entranced, you know. Then she sees her bottle, and she says, mine. And I thought, isn't that just like the rest of us? But we come back if we have learned, and the only way we know this, the only way we know it, is from our own experience. People can tell you over and over and over again, but we do that which we think is going to bring us happiness. And if we don't think it's going to bring us happiness, we don't do it. And if we do think it's going to give us happiness, we reach for it again and again, no matter how transparently foolish it may look to somebody who is a little more expanded in their awareness. The longer I live, the more I am amazed at the patience of Swami Kriyananda. What he had to put up from us, unbelievable. You know, but we were energetic and sincere and we were really trying. And he just tuned into that and just pushed it forward. And no matter how often we went from "Lord, I am thine" to "This is mine, he just would very calmly. I was talking to Jyotish about it recently. We were laughing about how Swamiji had this way. If you didn't hear him the first time, he'd wait a couple of years. And then he'd bring it up like it was a brand new idea. And he would just be so cheerful about it. And if you remembered, as I remembered, that he'd said it before. And then if you didn't listen, he'd wait another year. And then he'd say, "I've had an idea. You know, maybe you should try to get rid of that horrible quality in you." Although he would never say it like that, but that'd be what he would be trying to do. Just trying to help us. But somehow it's working. Someone who was helping me once worked through a confusion in my mind. The question was perfect. "Oh," she said, "how is this working for you? What are you getting from this? How is this serving you?" And of course, when I stopped and looked at it that way, I realized, well, in some way, despite the fact that I claim this quality is making me miserable, in fact, I like it. But we discover it again and again. You know, whether it's because an unexpected illness strikes, and maybe even untimely death comes. Maybe the children that we put so much hope in just have a destiny different than the one that we set up for them. You know, we have this idea. I'm so amused sometimes by children who are adults who are quite estranged from their parents. I mean, or at least distant from their parents, are absolutely convinced that their children will be close with them. Excuse me? Were you there when you turned your back on your parents? Like, What are you thinking? And then they're heartbroken when their children go in another direction. Sometimes you have incarnations where you do hang out together. But if your children are also your friends when you grow up, believe me, that's really lucky. There's no guarantee of that. But we have these experiences over and over again. We put our hope in one thing, and then it just manifests, and then it dematerializes. Where did that go? Where did that go? And all we have left is our consciousness. All we have left is bliss or the lack of it. And in the end, that's all that we have. It's all that we have. And I've been with enough people who were dying. I've been with enough people who did die, sitting with them, sometimes for a long time, sometimes seeing them just before the end. And at that point, everything is past, and all that's there is their consciousness. All that's left with us is our consciousness. Think how many, 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 beyond count, times we have been there. In fact, that was one of the things that got me really strongly on the spiritual path. I remember one night, I lay awake most of the night, I tried to imagine the moment of my death, and I tried to imagine what or who would still be with me. And I don't mean hovering by the side, I mean with me, inside of me. And it was so clear that sooner or later, no matter how many beautiful birthday meadows or beautiful weddings we manifest or children we raise or whatever we do, it's all going to come down to a moment in which the body is no longer responsive and all that we have is our consciousness. Who is there? Who am I? What am I identified with? Where did I find my happiness? The great joy of the community life that we have, of the spiritual life that we have, it was particularly manifest this weekend because we, you know, many, many, many of us got together to celebrate what really should be celebrated, which is a beautiful divine friendship between two souls who are integral to our lives here. We manifested this enormous reality, and then it completely shrank to nothing again. You see, that's everything. That's our lives. That's little Jordan, you know, just lying against Kia's heart. Just tiny little Jordan. He's going to manifest a whole incarnation and live it through, and then it'll go to nothing. He already has. You know, inherent in that tiny body are all the incarnations he's manifested and are gone. And this is the good news. That's the wind of spirit. And what we really are is just this divine wind blowing through all these experiences. And if what we enjoy is that divine wind blowing, you see, we can enjoy all the rest of it just as well because nothing has changed. You know, the courtyard is filled with hundreds of people, and then it's completely empty, and it's all gone. But nothing has changed, because the unseen power of spirit manifested and withdrew, manifested and withdrew. And the more we can live with each other in that same thought, love each other as deeply and as powerfully as we can manifest God through us, There's no joy in holding back. But if we give ourselves to life and to one another, we have to give ourselves first to God. God first. We're just like everyone else, except we put God first. Everything about us is first given to God. And then with the power that He gives us, we give it to everything else around us. But you see, life, death, beauty, lack of it, joy, sorrow, sickness, and health. It's all the same. It's just the wind of the spirit manifesting, withdrawing. You know how fortunate we are. How fortunate we are to have noticed. So many people wander around this world just without a clue. It just hits them left, right, and center, and they never have any idea where it's coming from. But somehow or another, through our life experience, we've come to this point. And at all times now, give your heart first to God and let Him do with it whatever He wants. Go along for the ride and enjoy it completely. And then we enjoy it completely. Yesterday, Daiva said to me something I'd never actually heard. He said that Swamiji made the remark once. He said, I just made the decision that I would let nothing that happened affect my consciousness. Now, he didn't mean that he wouldn't participate, but he meant that his consciousness was independent of the experiences that came to him. And of course, that consciousness was independent because in a state of bliss. And that's not something that is unattainable or for someone else. That is who we are. More powerfully than that, we are driven, just as little Jordan is driven to expand his body, more deeply, all of us are driven to expand our consciousness. And once we understand life as that experience, then everything we seek will come to us. God bless you.